It's time for the Rink Rats. With your hosts, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats. Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. Jesse, how you doing?
Good, man. Good.
We got a lot to talk about today. There's some goalies that are coming back from injury. There's some goalies that are going to the injured reserve list. And there are some teams that are benefiting, and then there are teams that are not going to benefit quite so much. So let's just get right to it. Carey Price comes back from the injured reserve list, and he looks like Carey Price, the Vezina Trophy winning goalie.
Yeah. And all those people that were saying, oh, he's not any good, oh, they messed up by paying him that huge contract. Man, I don't know how many times I heard, whether it was on national radio, whether it was on like TSN podcasts, on any of that stuff, the Canadians screwed up by giving Carey Price that massive contract. And I heard everything from he's not that good, which is clearly not true. He was clearly injured. He comes back. He's still the best goalie in the NHL. It's not close.
Yeah.
And then I also heard, even if he is that good, a goalie doesn't make this, and as a goalie, this pissed me off in particular. I heard the argument that you can't pay a goalie $10 million a year because, unlike other positions, he doesn't make the players around him better. So
I heard that argument too.
So the argument is, oh, we pay Sidney Crosby $10 million, but that's because everyone that touches the ice with him also plays better, so it's worth it.
Right.
Look at what has happened since Carey Price has come back. He doesn't need to make any of the other players better because when you're a goalie, it doesn't matter what the other players on the team do.
Right.
If they don't beat you, they can't win.
Yeah, so the argument that he doesn't make the rest of the team better, I think you can throw that out because, again, if you have a world-class goalie, if you have an elite goalie that's rocking a sub-2 goals against average and a 9.2, 9.3 save percentage, that means you're getting fantastic goaltending. You don't have to score 3 or 4 goals a game to win. You don't have to do that. So by default, Carey Price being Carey Price makes your team have to work. They don't have to score in bunches to win games.
Exactly.
So it makes everything else better as a trickle-down effect.
Yeah, he doesn't make them better. He just makes them the bar that they have to clear to win lower.
Yeah, their goal-scoring threshold is lower. So does it make Jonathan Drouin better? No, but it makes that one goal or one assist that Jonathan Drouin will score in that game significantly more valuable, more important, because you get 2 or 3, you're probably going to win with a locked-in Carey Price.
Exactly, and we see it in the playoffs mostly, just because you keep playing the same team over and over. When a team knows their goalie behind them is on fire, is standing on his head, it changes the way you play hockey. It gives you confidence. It changes the entire dynamic of the game when one goalie on one side of the ice is just completely dominating. We saw it with Gibson was doing it to the Golden Knights for 2.5 periods.
The difference is John Gibson hasn't gotten to that point where he can do it for a full 60 minutes. Carey Price can. He's more than capable of stealing a game or even stealing a series. Now, the question, though, is with that contract, that Carey Price contract, $10 million a season, he has to win a Stanley Cup, right? I mean, he has to win a Stanley Cup for that contract for the Montreal Canadiens and the organization, the fans, to look back at that contract and say, that was a good investment.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I don't think this team, as currently constructed, can win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah,
I think they need more.
Mm-hmm.
But that's partly through, we talked about it before the season, they've made a lot of bad decisions on the management side. And Carey Price can absolutely get them to the playoffs.
Right.
And he can probably steal a series. But when you go against, they're gonna run into... The Penguins are still an offensive firehouse. They're just going to get 40 shots a game on Price.
Sure. Or Tampa Bay.
And Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. Or even Columbus. Teams, like, they're going to run into a team that is going to just be so much better than them that Price isn't going to be able to make up for it.
Right.
They need to move some pieces around. They've tried. It's not like the Canadians are sitting on their hands not trying to get better. They are. They're just making bad moves.
Right. So that's kind of the double-edged sword, right, with general managers, because you want them to be doing something to make your team better, but when you trade away PK Subban, that it just you almost want to say, hey, Mark, stop doing dumb things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that Weber contract is horrendous. It's worse than the Price contract. Everyone talks about the Price contract. The Weber contract is a lot worse.
Well, it's the same thing that you're running into in Edmonton. You look at the Connor McDavid contract. You look at the Leon Draisaitl contract, and people are complaining about those two contracts. And then you look down the roster, and you got Milan Lucic making $7 million. That's the bad contract.
Mm-hmm.
Not McDavid, not Draisaitl. Yeah. Those two guys are going to be good for the length and duration of their contracts, and they probably should be making more money than they actually are. But you got Milan Lucic making $7 million, and he's not good now.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I hate it when people complain how much a player is making, that he's making too much, when he's playing well.
Right.
It costs money.
Yeah.
To win games, like, you have to pay good players. That's just how it works. Now, the way you don't screw up is don't pay players that are going to end up being worse by the end of that contract.
Sure.
But as long as a guy is playing well, pay him whatever he wants. Carey Price, pay him $10 million a year if he's playing like Carey Price. Mm-hmm. Connor McDavid, it's when you get into situations like, I don't know, I'm blanking right now, for the Kings.
Andre Kopitar?
No. The guy that everyone wanted to go to the
Oh, Dustin Brown.
Dustin Brown. That's when you get screwed. Is when you pay a guy a bunch of money and then they're not the player you thought they were.
Which is interesting because Dustin Brown with more ice time is now the player that he was when he signed that contract. So then you've got to factor in all these other things. Dustin Brown gets ice time, Dustin Brown starts to produce. Dustin Brown didn't get ice time, he didn't produce, and now all of a sudden you sit there and you wonder how badly Daryl Sutter screwed up Dustin Brown over the course of those years where everyone was hating his contract.
Mm-hmm.
If he gave him three more minutes of ice time, as you're seeing with John Stevens, then you see that maybe it wasn't Dustin Brown the entire time. Maybe it was the coaching staff. So there's a whole bunch of things that you have to take into account when it comes to contracts, who's not performing, and what might be different if they were given more of a chance. Better start times, better zone times, all that different stuff. So there's all these questions that you have, but you're absolutely right. When it comes to contracts, you want to see the player that you sign performing to that number at the end of the contract.
Yeah.
I have no doubt in my mind that Leon Draisaitl will be an $8.5 million player at the end of his contract. I have no doubt that Connor McDavid will be a $12.5 million player at the end of his contract. Milan Lucic is not a $7 million player now, and it's only the second year of a seven-year deal. That is why the Oilers are in a bad position. Not because of McDavid, not because of Draisaitl. It's bad contracts given out to subpar players that you thought were going to be good and turned out to be declining.
Exactly, yeah. I just love it when everyone's like, oh, that's too much money. Like, okay, so just every time you get a good player, that you draft a player that develops into someone great,
mm-hmm.
just don't pay him then, I guess, because that's too much money.
And
so how about we just won't have any good players and we just won't pay anybody any money?
Right, so like, you know, Connor McDavid, $12.5 million. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, but he could be the best player to ever live.
Right, no, and you're absolutely right. And I don't think $12.5 million is maybe even fair market value. I think he probably could have made more. If he went to free agency, he would have made $15 million.
Well, easily.
Easily, right?
Yeah, because there would have been 30 teams.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bidding against each other for him.
I mean, you don't think for a minute the Golden Knights wouldn't have been in on that?
Every
single team would have thrown an offer his way, and it would have gotten ridiculous. But he would probably, if you would have signed him for 15, he's worth that.
Yes.
If you would have signed him for 20, he's worth that.
Yeah, and plus, remember, the cap's going up every year.
Exactly. But see, what's funny about it, though, is you're not always going to find a Sidney Crosby, a guy that's willing to take less money to have parts around him. And I don't necessarily think that Sidney Crosby should do that.
I mean, I don't.
And we're going to talk about a guy here in a little bit once we get to the goalies and their injuries. But we're going to talk about a guy who actually came out and said, I'm not going to sign for anything less than I'm worth. And I love that mentality. And I feel like some players get pressured into taking these hometown discounts to, quote, make the teams competitive. And I think it's bullshit.
Let's talk about it now. We'll talk about the goalies after. Erik Karlsson.
Yep.
Who is, without a doubt, the best defenseman in the entire NHL.
Yeah.
In my opinion, it's not even close. There's no argument.
No, there's zero argument.
And he made a statement this week saying, I will not be taking a hometown discount for Ottawa. Yep. I will be getting paid exactly what I deserve, not a penny less. Doesn't matter where I'm playing.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was fantastic because you sit and you wonder what a guy like Erik Karlsson's going to command. I think he's probably in the market of $10 million.
I don't think, if I'm Erik Karlsson, if it doesn't have two digits, it needs to be a seven-figure deal.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean,
per year.
At minimum, 8-year, $80 million. At minimum.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, it has to be at least $10 million a year. So that's the bottom line. Like, if someone comes to me with negotiating, if they say a number less than $10
million, yeah,
get out of my office.
No, absolutely. And what I love about it is he says, I know my worth, and I'm not going to play for less than what I'm worth, no matter where I'm playing. And I love that because you could argue that the Ottawa Senators have had this undervalued defenseman on their team for however long Karlsson's current contract has been since he broke into the NHL. And they went to the Stanley Cup. You know, they were within a goal of going to the Stanley Cup final with Erik Karlsson. They didn't get there. But really, they haven't done a whole lot to take advantage of Erik Karlsson on a discount.
Yeah, he's, what, making $6.5 million, I think?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. The fact that you've had the best player at his position, any position, whatever position, just any position. If you have the best player at his position in the entire NHL for $6 million a year,
yeah,
that's like an unbelievable value.
Right.
So Karlsson, not only does he deserve to get paid every penny he's worth, but you've been getting him for way cheaper than you should have for the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no. And the thing is, these guys put their bodies through so much in an 82-game season, year after year, getting smashed. Screw that. Screw taking less money so that your team can try to figure out ways to put guys around you. No. Pay me what I deserve. I'm putting my body through this hell.
Yeah.
Pay me exactly what I deserve. And then that's your job to figure out how to get other players and how to fit it under the cap. That's not my job. My job is to play hockey. I'm going to play to the best of my ability. I'm going to be really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Give me my money.
But see, that's the argument, though, right? Is you've got Erik Karlsson right now and a very manageable discounted contract, and you're still not putting the pieces around him that you need to be successful. The Bobby Ryan trade... The Matt Duchene trade, is it going to work out for the Ottawa Senators? I don't really know, but he hasn't looked great since coming to Ottawa. And you sit there and you say, why am I going to take a discount? If I've been on a discounted contract and we haven't done anything but one time. And it was really because the East was wide open and none of the other teams surrounding us really tried to improve their roster going into the playoffs last year. So it was going to be some team and the Penguins. And we just happened to be that some team.
Yeah, I'm not going to be too hard on Ottawa because, and I've said this before on here, and it's just my general thought. It's really freaking hard to win a Stanley Cup.
You're right.
You can have all the pieces. You can be the most talented team. You can be the team that's playing the best. Washington Capitals every single season. And not win it. And it's not just the Capitals. They're the best example because they continually do it over and over and over. But every year there's a team that's the best team. Chicago is another example. They were the best team in the Western Conference. I don't think there's any way you can argue that the Chicago Blackhawks entering the playoffs were the best team in the Western Conference and had the best chance of winning the Stanley Cup. They didn't even win a single playoff game. It's just really hard. So the fact that Ottawa was one goal away from the Stanley Cup final, I'm not going to be too hard on them. On not putting the pieces around him, because clearly their team was good enough. They were that close to making it.
Yeah, I know. I agree with that, but consistently there is what I'm going for.
Yeah.
Like Ottawa, you know, honest to God, when you go into a new season, you have no idea what you're going to get with the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah.
They could be one goal away from the Stanley Cup finals, or they can miss the playoffs by 10 points. You have no idea. And I think that's what I'm trying to get at is if I'm Erik Karlsson, I take a look at what the Ottawa management has been able to do with me completely underpaid. And then if they come to me with a hometown discount, say, come on, Eric, take 8.5. Well, we're gonna build up. We're going to get pieces. We're going to be a perennial contender. I would say, no, you're not, because you had a chance to be a perennial contender. And right now, no one knows what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. We have no idea. Like, the playoffs and the Ottawa Senators is not a lock right now.
Oh, absolutely not. I think they had like six games. They broke their losing streak finally last night.
Yeah.
But they had lost like five or six in a row.
And it's funny because, you know, you see these examples of Sidney Crosby's taking a hometown discount to, quote, try to make the team better. When you're that good, you being you makes the team better. And we talked about it with Carey Price. We talked about it with Connor McDavid. Like, get what you're worth. You only have one shot at this.
Yeah. Can we just talk about how much fun that offseason's going to be? If Carlson just, because this is, okay, I don't think we're going to get that, because what I think is going to happen is, for those out there that aren't like super into it, Carlson won't become a free agent this offseason. It's the following offseason. He's under contract this year, and then next season he's still under contract with the Senators. He's still got two more seasons, including this year. But so what I think is going to happen is, this upcoming offseason, still with a year left in his deal, the Senators are going to try to extend his deal.
Yep.
If he doesn't agree, or if he wants more than they're willing to give him, I think they trade him.
Yeah.
But let's just say a year and a half from now, Carlson hits the open market, just completely open. How much fun is that going to be?
Oh, it's going to be great.
It's going to be like, I can remember, like, longer than that, like 5 years ago, when LeBron James entered free agency from the Cleveland Cavaliers, and he was doing like the tour, and he was going to Miami, then he spends the night in, the Knicks are wining and dining him, then he goes to LA and the Lakers. That's what it's going to be like for Erik Karlsson, because they all can pay him the same amount of money. That's the thing. Every team's going to have, there's going to be 10 teams with the money to pay him what he wants. So it's going to be, okay, these 10 teams can all pay me $12 million a year, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, show me why I should pick your team. Which coach is going to play with my style of hockey the best? Which team has the nicest place to live? Which state doesn't have state tax? Hint, hint.
Vegas?
No, I don't think the Golden Knights are going to be in that sweepstakes.
No,
but,
probably
but
not.
But I'm just saying, that offseason is going to be fun.
Now, I'm just looking something up real quick, because I want to see when Drew Doughty goes to market. Well, so, okay, so Drew Doughty is under contract for the next two seasons.
So same as Carlson.
So I'm sorry, so 2017-18, 2018-19, he hits unrestricted free agency in 19-20. So the same as Erik Karlsson.
Same as Erik Karlsson.
Could you imagine what anarchy would ensue if those two guys go to free agency?
Yeah.
At the same time.
Be a lot of fun. And then I think the teams that are chasing Karlsson, that obviously he can only pick one, I think Doughty is now your like consolation prize. Like now that Carlson signs, now all those 10 teams that were trying to get Carlson switched their attention straight to Doughty.
Now, do you think they go on tour together?
No,
no.
Like, are they like friends? I don't know. No,
but they, you know, they're probably considered one of the. Oh, Carlson's number one, but Doughty's probably top five in the league, right?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
So, how
old is Doughty, though? Because Carlson's still like in the prime of his career. Isn't Doughty a little older?
Doughty, I want to say he's mid to upper 20s.
Okay,
so he's not an old guy.
He's still fine then.
Yeah. So 08, I believe, was his draft year, 2008. So
he's probably 27?
Yeah, 27, 26, 27, somewhere in there. So that's my other question. Which guy is going to set the market value for the other? And if Drew Doughty extends with the Kings, because he's said multiple times he wants to stay a King, but there have also been some comments that have leaked out where he said, you know, growing up in the Toronto area, you always dream about playing for the Maple Leafs. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. So if Doughty does re-sign with the Kings at, say, $8.5, $9 million, does that automatically set the bar at $9 million for Erik Karlsson? How much better is Erik Karlsson than Drew Doughty? I think significantly.
I think defensively, they're about equal. Doughty might be just a hair better.
Yeah.
And then offensively, Karlsson's a lot better than Doughty.
Right, exactly. So So you have to sit there and say, which guy is going to set the market for the other? And then if Carlson resigns and it's north of $10 million, what does that do for the Los Angeles Kings and Drew Doughty? How much money do they then have to pay him? Because Drew Doughty could say, I want a Norris Trophy. I'm a Norris Trophy winning defenseman. I have two Stanley Cups. I've anchored this blue line. If Erik Karlsson's making 10.5, I want 11.
Yeah.
And it's possible.
Good luck.
It's possible. No, it's absolutely possible.
And that would screw the Kings because there's no way they're paying him that. And if they do pay him that, then that could end up being a very bad contract.
But that's the thing, though. They've already got Anže Kopitar making 10.5. So what are they going to do? You've got the landscape over the next 5 years of contracts in the NHL is going to be fascinating to watch because I feel like GMs are still forgetting that there's a salary cap. You know what I mean? Like they're just, the cap's going up by $1 million or $2 million every season. Let's just start handing out 10 million contracts like they're nothing.
And it's why George McPhee is so excited with this opportunity with the Golden Knights. He absolutely is loving it.
Absolutely, yeah.
What he has is the envy of every general manager in the league of a team with no bad contracts. That you're completely in the clear. They just signed Braden McNabb to that 4-year, $10 million extension. And McNabb and Riley Smith are now the only players that they have under contract through 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Two players on the entire team. And neither of them are making, one's making $2.5 million, the other one's making like $4 million. Like, that's nothing.
Yeah. No, it's great. And it's so good because right now, and we've seen it and we've talked about it, George McPhee is using this season as an audition. An audition for Jonathan Marchessault, an audition for Shea Theodore, an audition for a bunch of these parts that can be extended and make up the core. How many GMs get the chance to do that? Zero. One. George McPhee.
Yeah.
He gets to literally see what his core is and then lock them up into deals that are going to make this team really good and able to have flexibility 3 years down the road. It was a masterful job in the expansion draft, and it's really coming to fruition now as you start to see signings with the Golden Knights, as you start to see which players he's going to commit to. That makes it very clear what this team will be in 3 and 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Completely agree.
So now that we complained about money, let's go back and talk about some injuries because there's a rash of goaltending injuries, and it's not involving the Golden Knights. Go figure that one.
The rest of the league is trying to catch up.
Yeah, exactly. So Corey Crawford is week to week. Chicago has been, we thought out of the gate they were going to be very good. All of a sudden, Brandon Saad's back with Jonathan Toews. They look like the 1-2 punch they were. Patrick Kane can play elite hockey with anybody. And Corey Crawford is probably one of the more underrated goaltenders in the league. Corey Crawford's out week to week. What does this do for the Chicago Blackhawks?
It hurts them really, really bad.
Yep.
They've been, like we said, they haven't been outstanding, but they've been solid, and it's been largely to do with Corey Crawford. This team hasn't been scoring the goals that they have in past years. They've struggled on the offensive end, but Corey Crawford has been the best player on the ice on most games.
Mm-hmm.
The dude gets hurt.
Yeah.
He's been hurt.
Every
how many?
Year.
I don't think he's had a season where
not
he didn't
one.
Get hurt.
Not one.
Luckily, they've had one of the best, if not the best, backup goaltenders in the entire league every year.
Yep.
So that when he gets hurt, Antti Raanta just comes right. Or sorry,
Scott Darling.
Scott Darling just comes. I always mix up Raanta.
It was Raanta, and then it was Darling. So
So Darling comes in, plays great, not as good as Crawford, but really good for a backup goalie. Mm-hmm. Then Crawford comes right back in. Things keep rolling. All of a sudden, they don't have that now. This is going to hurt the Blackhawks, I think. I think this is going to put a significant dent in their team. Like, I could see them losing more than half of their games while Crawford's out.
I could see that, too. But does this affect their chances at making the playoffs?
This is a long season. It just depends. Crawford. It all depends on how bad Crawford's injury is.
Sure.
And you know how it is in the NHL. We're never going to know the true expected length of this guy's injury. So if he only misses 3 weeks, not that bad. I think they'll be all right.
If he doesn't come back till mid-January?
Yeah, then now we're talking, it's a little worse.
Okay, so shifting gears from Corey Crawford, we're going to talk about Matt Murray. Matt Murray is also week to week right now. I believe it's a lower body injury, so when you hear week to week lower body, it's probably a knee or a groin or something like that. And we've seen that take probably in the ballpark of 4 to 6 weeks.
Unless you're Oscar Dansk, and in that case, you're just gone.
Yeah. Hey, the Golden Knights have announced that Oscar Dansk will be out for the remainder of the road trip.
That was a month ago?
A month ago.
Yeah.
So no update on him yet.
And the thing is, like, you see Fleury around practice. You see, like, even when Subban was out, we'd see him around. Is Oscar Dansk even in Las Vegas?
I saw him last week.
Really?
He was in the press box at a home game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I saw him last week, but I haven't really seen much of him at all. And you're right, Subban and Fleury have been more visible around the facilities. But yeah, I mean, Oscar Dansk is like a ghost. And we'll talk about why we're bringing Oscar Dansk up, because let's just face it, Lagasse backing up Subban is not a recipe for success. No. So,
but yeah,
Matt Murray, week to week, does this put a significant dent in the Penguins' ability or chances to make the playoffs?
I think it's even more significant than Crawford's injury with the Blackhawks, because the Penguins' goaltender depth is really bad. At least they got rid of Antti Niemi.
Well, that's what I'm going to say. When your off-season acquisition is Antti Niemi, and you come out on record and saying you expect him to play somewhere in the ballpark of 30 to 35 games, you need to just stop being a general manager in the NHL. Mm-hmm. And Jim Rutherford's done a fantastic job with the Penguins, but this is the biggest miss of misses he's ever had as a GM.
Yeah, so as I like to do, I'm going to tease a little story on Las Vegas Sun.
Okay, there it is.
I've got a story coming out this week. I don't want to put a day on it because I'm not sure what day, but this is going to air Monday.
Monday. Yeah.
So it's the five teams that wish they could have a do-over in the expansion draft.
Okay, nice.
Protect someone else. Do something different. And the Pittsburgh Penguins are one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't think that that's the case because Fleury, for the most part, hasn't done much because he's been hurt all season.
Yeah.
But the Pittsburgh Penguins really, really, really wish they had Marc-Andre Fleury at this point.
I agree 100%.
Now, would he have gotten a concussion? That's like a whole nother, like, that's like a separate universe type argument.
Butterfly effect,
yeah.
Yep.
But just the fact that they thought Antti Niemi was going to play 30 games, they did not want Murray. That tells you that the Penguins did not want Murray. Like, Antti Niemi, yeah, he's garbage. We all know this.
Mm-hmm.
But just aside from that, the thing you can read into that is they didn't want Murray playing 65 games.
No.
After one period of hockey from Antti Niemi, 20 minutes of hockey,
yep,
they decided, well, Matt Murray's now going to play 65 games.
Yeah, absolutely.
One period into the season, their plans were ruined. That's how bad Antti Niemi is.
He's so bad.
Then they get rid of him, and anyone that they've brought in now, what's his name? Jeremy?
Tristan Jarry.
Jarry, yeah.
Yep.
So Jarry has played better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's been okay. But man, this team, and the Penguins, as good as they are not super solid defensively. They give up a lot of shots, which is why having Fleury and Murray, when he was playing really well, is so important to their team, because the style they play, the fast up and down, they're going to get a ton of chances, and they're just, the other team's going to get chances, but their goalie's just better than yours is on most nights.
Right.
Now all of a sudden it isn't. And now with Matt Murray out, who knows? When you hear day to day, and that could be a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. Here, week to
when
week.
You hear week to week, you're thinking this could be months.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
And I don't know if you saw the play. He got crashed into on like a fast break, and it looked bad. It didn't look. It wasn't like Oscar Dansk, for example, just kind of slipping on his own, or Subban overextending on to try to get to the blocker side. He was run into in the butterfly position.
Yeah. See, now what I find to be interesting about this is the Penguins are actively shopping Ian Cole, defenseman Ian Cole, and before you sit there and you think about it, Ian Cole is probably going to net you a third or fourth line center, which is a need that the Penguins have. Well, now the talk is that Ian Cole is going to net you a goalie that can get you through this, but that doesn't do anything to address your needs for a third or fourth line center. It doesn't do anything to address the depth scoring that is all of a sudden dried up because you've got to load up on your top two lines just to get offense. And this is something that I think if the Penguins pull the trigger on a trade Ian Cole for a goalie, I think that's going to be disastrous for the rest of their season because it's a bargaining chip that they have, and it needs to go to the area that they absolutely need most. You will get Matt Murray back. And it's almost the same situation as George McPhee ran into when Fleury got hurt, when Subban got hurt, when Dance got hurt. Do you mortgage your future for a short-term thing? And, you know, if Matt Murray's out for 6 weeks or 8 weeks, you just have to hope that maybe you can get a third-line center and you can balance out your lines a little bit better and you can get Sidney Crosby going again and Evgeny Malkin going again and start to score some goals and hope that Tristan Jarry is good enough to only allow 3 goals a game.
If you're the Pittsburgh Penguins, you just have to hope that Marc-Andre Fleury comes back from his concussion and then you trade a first-round pick for him. That's what you really need to hope.
Yeah, because you're not going to trade Ian Cole for Marc-Andre Fleury. No, we're good on defense, okay?
I don't think McPhee wants anything to do with another defender. We already got too many.
No, not at all.
But,
I mean, Crosby for Fleury straight up would be okay.
Yeah. No, but a draft pick for Fleury. And it's not like you already gave McPhee a second-round pick to take Fleury in the first place. Oh, wait, no, you did.
Yeah, you did do that. That was a thing that happened.
You did give him and like I said, I don't think when people think of, like, expansion team screw-ups, the Penguins usually don't come to mind just because, like I said, Fleury's been out the whole season. But when you go back and look at that, the Penguins gave the Golden Knights a second-round pick to take Fleury.
Yes.
Because in their minds, they're thinking, his contract's too big.
Mm-hmm.
It's a waste. We don't need a backup goalie making that much money. It's not like the Penguins, like, okay, there are some teams that paid the Golden Knights a ransom to not pick a player. Yep. Anaheim Ducks are a perfect example.
Which is interesting.
Because
they
had Sammy Vatanen and a couple of Manson, too, who they didn't want to lose. They had really good players that they didn't want to lose. The Penguins didn't really have, like, any big-time players that they were going to lose in the expansion draft.
Right.
The only reason they paid the Golden Knights the second-round pick to take Fleury was simply, please take our backup goalie. He's making too much money. We don't need him.
Exactly.
And now they look like idiots.
Now they look like one of the dumber franchises in the league. Now, and I'm not asking you to give away the entire article, but is Minnesota on that list?
They certainly are.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes.
All right, good. So last goalie that we're going to talk about, I lie, last goalie around the league that we're going to talk about is Cam Talbot. He is also out week to week. The Edmonton Oilers, we have talked about this on the podcast. Why are they so awful? I don't know. Actually, yes, I do. Milan Lucic is making $7 million, and that's a problem.
And their coaching is horrendous.
And you went hard on Todd McLellan, and you said that he should probably be fired if this doesn't turn around. You want to clarify that a little bit?
I think he should be fired within the month if it doesn't turn around.
So
January 1st, if this team doesn't look like it's trending to not be the last place team in this division, because, again, I do not count the Coyotes as an NHL team. They are an AHL team that is being allowed to train in the NHL.
But the Coyotes took the Oilers to overtime and barely beat the Coyotes.
Yeah, yeah. And they're only, like, I think, like 3 points ahead of the Coyotes in the standings.
So bad.
So like I said, Coyotes don't count. They're not a real team.
Okay.
If the Oilers on January 1st, if I don't feel like they're turning the corner, they are starting to make the trek up from last place to a playoff spot, he's fired. Get out.
Yeah.
You cannot have Connor McDavid, Draisaitl, Lucic, even though his contract is too big, it's still a player on the ice that's got talent.
Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
Nugent-Hopkins, who's the guy I always bring up. I love him.
Yep.
You have way too much talent on this team to be in last place of the worst division in the entire NHL.
That's a fair point.
Get the hell out. You're fired.
Did you see the own goal that Chris Russell scored?
Yes, I did, and it was bad. It was worse than Derek England's.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was definitely worse. Was it worse than Dan Boyle's own goal? Do you remember that in the playoffs for the Sharks? It was an overtime play, and he was coming down into his own zone.
On like a 2-on-1.
No. He was coming down into his own zone just to pick the puck up off the boards, and he was going to circle around the net, and he just throws it. Like, he was trying to throw it around the boards to get it to his defense partner, but he just snipes it corner.
Okay, no, I don't remember that one.
It was so bad. No. It was so bad. Look up Dan Boyle own goal playoffs for the Sharks, and that'll just give you an indication of just how bad the Sharks were when they couldn't win. But, okay, so Cam Talbot's out. We have talked about Cam Talbot being one of those goalies that likes to play a lot, and the Edmonton Oilers last year really bought into that, and he had a great year.
73 games.
But he gets to the playoffs, and he just starts to make mistakes that you could argue are probably from fatigue. And you see the same thing with Sergei Bobrovsky. You see the same thing with a lot of other goalies that get to the playoffs, and all of a sudden they don't know how to play. It's not because their skills diminished. They're just physically tired.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at this two ways. One, it's going to give Brassois a lot of playing time, and it's going to you're going to get to see as the entire Edmonton Oilers organization what you have in him if he can be a bona fide number two goalie in the NHL. And then you're going to give Cam Talbot a little bit of rest. And I understand that it's dealing with an injury, but it's still rest. We saw what the rest did to Carey Price. Cam Talbot has not been playing that great to start the season. So the hope in Edmonton, at least, is that you give Cam Talbot a little bit of time to recuperate and rest and get better, and he comes back the goalie he was last year, not the goalie he was to start this season.
Yeah, I think this injury, this goaltender injury, is less significant to their team than Murray and Crawford, just because I don't think Talbot's as good as those two are.
Right.
But this team is used to having Talbot behind them, and Talbot alone, because like I said, 73 games last year he played.
Insane.
I really like Brassois. I think he can be good.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's one of the more intriguing kind of unknown goalies in the league.
Right.
So I think he's going to come in here, and I actually think he's going to play really well. I think it's a combination of he's going to play really well, and I think kind of like you saw with the Golden Knights, Fleury was standing on his head every night.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden he gets hurt, Subban comes in, he doesn't have to stand on his head. Why? Right. They won't tell us this. They lie to our faces and say we don't play different. Yeah. We don't play any different. I know we were giving up 56 shots a night with Fleury, and then all of a sudden it was only 16 with Subban.
Yeah, exactly.
But we play no different.
No, not at all. Not at all.
But I think the Oilers know we don't have Talbot back there. This guy's new. He's a young guy. Let's protect him a little bit. Give him some shots from the outside. Don't let him get in close. I think they protect him. I think he plays better than people expect. I think his stats, I think he actually outplays Cam Talbot stats-wise.
Yep.
Not saying he's better than Cam Talbot, but I think this could kind of, I don't know why, but I just refuse to believe that this team is going to suck all year. But I think this team is going to turn it around, and I think this could be like kind of jump-starting that.
It's a rallying cry, I think.
Yes.
That like, whereas you look at Corey Crawford and you look at Matt Murray, is like, oh my God, again, something is not working out the right way. Now it's going to be, okay, We lost our number one goalie. We're not where we want to be in the standings, but by God, we're going to figure out a way to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. So we're going to touch on it really, really quickly because we've got some Golden Knights stuff that we need to get to. But Sammy Vatanen, that player from the Anaheim Ducks that the Anaheim Ducks were very, very keen on keeping in the expansion draft and not letting go to the Vegas Golden Knights, is on the move to New Jersey. For Adam Henrique and other players that we're not going to talk about. We're only going to keep it to Sammy Vatanen and Adam Henrique. Your thoughts and analysis on the trade?
Sometimes a trade works for both teams. Sometimes it's not a winner and a loser. We always try to, who won this trade? Who lost this trade? Let's try to like make it a competition. Like sometimes one team just has an abundance of something and needs something, and the other team has an abundance of what they need, and they need what they have an abundance of. It works perfect. This trade works for both teams. New Jersey has a ton of young, skilled forwards. Their power play has struggled because they don't have an offensive defenseman to captain that. Sammy Vatanen is exactly that. He's perfect for it.
Mm-hmm.
He comes in, their power play immediately becomes better. The Ducks, on the other hand, have no centers because they're all injured.
Yes.
They're going to come back, but you're going to get Getzlaf and Kessler back.
Kessler, yep.
When they both come back, Henrique can now go to where he belongs, which is a third center, a very good third center, though.
Yep.
But until then, you now have a better replacement for your two star centers that are out than you currently have. So the Ducks get the center they needed. They get scoring depth once their big-time guys return. The Devils get a defenseman that can play the power play for them. I think it helps both teams. Where I will say the Ducks lost this trade is, you can't see it as Vatanen for Henrique. The Ducks lost Vatanen, Shea Theodore, and Clayton Stoner for Henrique. Because they could have just lost Sammy Vatanen to the Golden Knights.
Yep.
And not give it up Shea Theodore or Clayton Stoner. Like, that was a throw-in. Like, they don't give a crap if they lost him.
We just say Theodore.
But they lost their number one prospect to keep Sammy Vatanen, who they then traded a month later. Well, 3 months later.
But the argument could be that if the Golden Knights did end up taking Sammy Vatanen, the Ducks might be in a position right now where they're going to have to trade Shea Theodore for Adam Henrique.
That's true.
I don't know that...
You're going to lose both either way. The expansion draft sucks for everyone but the Golden Knights.
Yeah, it really does. We had Jamie Hirsch from NHL Network on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, and I asked her if the Golden Knights being competitive right off the bat is a validation of the new rules of expansion. And she thought about it for a minute. She said, yeah, I think it is, because this is what Commissioner Gary Bettman wanted. He wanted a team that would come into the league and wouldn't lose every single night. So I think that everyone wants to complain about the rules. Everyone wants to complain about the fact that the Golden Knights are the best talented expansion team that's ever come into the league.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you want that.
Yeah.
You don't. It doesn't benefit anybody if they come in and they're awful.
Why expand to a new market to have a crappy team that no one's going to care about? You're literally just wasting your time.
Right. And it's like, right now, the Golden Knights are in position to make the playoffs. If they don't make the playoffs, but they're still in that little bubble for the for the majority of the season before things kind of back off, or before George McPhee makes any moves or trades or anything like that, that just builds the excitement for what this team can be when they do get there.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just say they do get there. You and I are at T-Mobile all the time. That building is not cookie cutter. And
Ariel Helwani.
Yeah, Ariel. You don't clearly, whatever. But go see a hockey game there and tell me it's cookie cutter. That's ridiculous. But the point is, imagine what that building would be like if this team played the Kings in the playoffs.
Just anybody. Playoff hockey is special.
Yeah.
I am, like, there are a lot of people that probably listen to this podcast that are just hockey guys.
Mm-hmm.
They don't give a crap about any of the sport. I love all sports, except for baseball. It's terrible. I don't know how anyone watches it. But basketball playoffs, NBA playoffs, awesome. NFL playoffs, awesome. The college football playoff, great. Hockey playoffs are in a different category.
Absolutely.
The play changes. It's just so much fun, and the 7-game series makes it even better. The endless overtime is my favorite thing in all of sports.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
Can you imagine like a triple overtime playoff game at T-Mobile? Like, it's just, if this team gets a taste of the playoffs and these hockey fans that have latched on to the Golden Knights have taken over Las Vegas.
Absolutely.
I can't even believe how popular they've gotten. Mm-hmm. I did not expect this at all.
Yeah.
If these fans get a taste of playoff hockey, they're hooked for life now.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And that's something that may happen, may not happen. But we're going to address some things that right now that may be an indicator of how well the Golden Knights are going to finish off the year. So you wanted to talk about something that you heard Ken Hitchcock say, or at least the game plan that Ken Hitchcock employed against the Golden Knights at T-Mobile that allowed the Dallas Stars to win 3-0. Talk about it, and then let's analyze it after.
Yeah, so Hitchcock was asked, how'd you do this? Basically, mm-hmm. This team is the fourth highest scoring team in the NHL, and you not only did you shut them out, Bishop didn't have to do much in that game. The Golden Knights were pretty neutralized.
The volume of shots was high for Ben Bishop. I mean, he had like 34 saves or something like that.
But they weren't dangerous.
But there was nothing dangerous. Mm-hmm. There were no second chances.
Yep.
Zero.
So what he said was, our goal coming in was to limit their odd man rushes. They're really fast. They're really good on the break. As long as we just limit them in transition, they can't do much. And that's what I've been saying. I wasn't quite as bold as Hitchcock said it, but I've been saying this team struggles when they have the puck in the offensive zone.
Mm-hmm.
When the Golden Knights gain the zone and set up like a normal, for to use a basketball term, a half-court offense,
mm-hmm.
and just move the puck around the zone, they're not good at it. because they don't have those special players that can dance around a couple guys like like Bellemare did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In Edmonton, was it Edmonton? No, Toronto.
No, it was Montreal.
You're right.
Yeah.
Mix up all my Canadians. Sorry. Sorry, guys. No, but a play like that, which obviously Bellemare, that was like spectacular. He'll probably never do it again the rest of his life.
Probably not.
But other teams in the NHL have guys, like even like the Avalanche, they're in last place. But McKinnon can make a play like that.
Landeskog can work down,
a play like that. The Golden Knights don't have those guys yet. They will.
Mm-hmm.
Cody Glass, Suzuki, those are the ones you hope 2-3 years from now are those guys. But right now, right out of the gates, they don't have guys like that. So they struggle once the puck is in a tight little area in their zone. The way the Golden Knights have become the fourth highest scoring team in the NHL is 2-on-1s, 3-on-2s. They get these breaks. They make amazing cross-ice passes, and they have a knack for finishing the one-timers better than any team I've ever watched.
Yep,
it's unbelievable the percentage that they convert when it's a 2-on-1. The puck is passed to the second man, and he one-times it. Well, the goalie literally never saves it, ever.
No. And when you practice that, I would argue 35 to 40% of all of your practices, you're going to be very good. But that's Gerard Gallant understanding what this team does really well and making sure that that is executed to 100% proficiency every single game.
Yep. So we talk about when Colin Miller jumps up in the play or Shea Theodore jumps up in the play, you have a guy like Derek England or McNabb that kind of stays back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what other teams are doing is now neither of you are allowed to jump in the play. Don't jump in the play because we don't care. And it's part of the reason these games have been really, like the Dallas game was 0-0 for forever.
Mm-hmm.
Teams aren't scoring on the Golden Knights because they're not pressing forward. Their coaches are telling them, stay back, just whatever you do, the number one thing you need to worry about is not letting them get an odd-man rush. Two men back, always. At all times, we always have two men back. Eventually, we'll score.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, we will get some goals. They won't if we just don't let them get behind us. And the Stars did it, and I think Winnipeg did it last night until they had like a 3-goal lead, and then they kind of laxed up, and then the Golden Knights jumped on them and got some goals. I don't want to sound like this is like, and the Golden Knights have been figured out, they're never going to win again. No.
Right.
This team is still really talented.
They're really fast.
And that's what Hitchcock said. It's the fastest team we've played against.
Mm-hmm.
Not this team is fast, not they got a lot of speed. It's the fastest team we've played against. And then he was talking about Bishop's shutout, and he said he was very impressed by it because the Golden Knights play a style of hockey that's more difficult for a goalie than most teams.
Mm-hmm.
Because the puck's coming in so fast, it's not that set in the zone, pass it back and forth, where the goalie can kind of get his bearings and track the puck really easily. When the puck's coming at you that fast, it's hard to track. It's much harder to track the puck. So the Golden Knights still have... What am I looking for? They still have skills that are going to win them games, even if teams game plan correctly. But Gerard Gallant has done a great job with this team. He's the coach of the year so far, in my opinion.
Yeah.
He's the one that figured out, we're going to be good in transition. Let's practice it. Teams have now countered it, and now it's Gallant's turn to counter that. And he's got to come up with something other than, we're just going to play our game, we're going to compete hard, and we're going to have fun.
So a couple of things that I want to touch on is it is very difficult for teams to shut down their transition over a full 60 minutes.
Yes.
And I want to talk about the Minnesota game particularly. Minnesota played, they tried to limit the Golden Knights. And then there was a 5-minute span in the third period to start where it was pond hockey and the Golden Knights feasted on the Minnesota Wild. And then Minnesota got a lucky break off of Braden McNabb's stick, and then they shut it down. And so the Golden Knights are fortunate in that if they get 5 or 10 minutes of wide-open hockey, they typically are going to convert. We saw it happen the last time they played the Phoenix Coyotes. There was a little bit of open play. There were a little bit of transition and lost coverage by the Coyotes. And what happens? 3 goals in a minute 40 span, and all of a sudden, oh my God, what's going on? So you're absolutely right. There needs to be a part of this team that can cycle the puck down low and generate and make it difficult on the opposition and have to force them to play in their own zone. You have to have Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin playing a majority of the game in their own zone for them not to hurt you. And granted, those guys didn't hurt you. Braddock Foxa did. But there will be times where Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin will beat you because you're not playing enough in the offensive zone.
And I will argue that Gerard Gallant's initial attempt to create some offensive zone possession time and get something out of that is moving Alex Tuck to the first line. I think, because Alex Tuck, as good as he is, he's my favorite player on the team, he's not really a transition guy.
He can
show some wheels every once in a while, but he is more of a let's get the puck into the offensive zone, get him in front of the goalie. He can go down in the corners. He can go behind the goal and fight with guys. When you put Alex Tuck on that line with Halla and James Neal, those are three guys. Now, Halla's a transition guy because he's
so fast
as hell. Yep. But James Neal and Alex Tuck are slower. Slower. They're not slow, but they're slower than Leipzig and Halla and Carlson and guys like that. And I think that line is built to keep the puck in the offensive zone, cycle it around, get shots at the net with a guy in front of the goalie type of thing.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And the only other line that consistently is playing in the offensive zone, in spite of the fact that they never get any quality scoring chances, is the fourth line.
Yep.
So you have a couple of lines that can do it. You've got a couple of lines that go in transition, but you're absolutely right. With Alex Tuck and James Neal, those are two guys that feast on playing in the offensive zone. Alex Tuck will be able to get to loose pucks, keep him alive, keep things pinned against the boards, draw coverage to him. Erik Haula is going to be buzzing around and creating different seams and angles. And then James Neal, I asked Alex Tuck about it. What's it like to play with a guy like James Neal? James Neal, he said, likes to get lost in coverage. And the only way that James Neal can get lost in coverage is if you have the puck in the offensive zone doing work and he can find those seams and soft parts of the ice away from coverage. Mm-hmm. So in order for James Neal to be effective, you need to have a cycle of some kind for him to be able to just weave his way in and out and then back away from the defenders at the absolute right time. So I agree with you. I think Alex Tuck working with James Neal and Erik Haula is going to be that type of line that can do that. They just need to do it.
Mm-hmm. You know? They just started working together. I mean, it's been two games. And then juxtaposed to that is the second line, or 1B, whatever you want to call them.
Right.
That line, they're not going to... Jonathan Marchessault, Riley Smith, and William Karlsson are just not built to keep the puck in the offensive zone. They're built to beat you on the break.
Mm-hmm.
They're faster than you. They all skate really well. They all have great hands. They're going to beat you up the ice fast. They're not going to dump the puck into the corner and fight you for it. Jonathan Marchessault, Riley Smith, and Karlsson, they're just too small.
Sustained zone time is not what they're about. What they're about is sending one guy in on the forecheck, trying to create havoc, and then a quick pass into the neutral into the slot and a quick goal.
Exactly.
Or feasting on a turnover in the neutral zone, turning it around. Because they're so fast, they're always going to get odd man rushes. That's what that line's good at. So you don't want them to try to cycle the puck. That's not what they're going to do. That's not what they're going to be. But you do see different types of lines starting to emerge for Gerard Gallant, and it's all been necessitated by David Perron's injury.
Yep.
Because let's face it, David Perron getting hurt is probably one of the worst things that's happened to this team because there was such chemistry on that 1A line with Karlsson and Smith and Marchessault, and then there was really good chemistry with Perron, Haula, and Neal, and that allowed Tuck to play with Leipzig, and they were doing pretty good things as well, and then the fourth line with Carrier healthy was very, very good. So the David Perron, William Carrier injuries have really wreaked havoc on the consistency of the lines, of the forward lines for the Golden Knights.
Which I think David Perron is going to be back soon.
Mm-hmm.
I actually kind of think he might play against Anaheim on Sunday, which will be... It'll actually happen before you listen to this, but I think he could be back for Anaheim. If not, who do they play on Tuesday? Arizona?
No. They play Arizona on Sunday and Anaheim on Tuesday.
Are you sure?
I'm positive. I think.
Man, how many times are they going to play the Coyotes? The Golden Knights play the Coyotes once a week.
Well, this is their fourth time, right?
You're right. So Coyotes Sunday, Ducks Tuesday.
So they only have one more meeting with Arizona after Sunday,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Okay. That's the only team that they get to play five times.
Is it?
Yeah. The way the schedule breaks down is you play every team in your division four times.
Okay.
Except every team has one team that they play a fifth time.
Oh, because 31.
It's just odd. Yeah. So the Golden Knights got very lucky.
Thank you, NHL.
Yeah. Thankfully for the Golden Knights that it's the Coyotes and not the Edmonton Oilers.
Or the Kings.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. I love it. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about goalies. Let's talk about the Golden Knights goalies. Let's talk about Max Lagasse. How good is this guy when it comes to rebound control?
About as bad as I've seen an NHL goalie. And he's not an NHL goalie. He's an AHL goalie who's been forced into this role because of ridiculous injuries to a position. But I think he played decent enough during that run where he had to play 10 games in a row to where the Golden Knights thought, let's give Subban the night off. Subban can probably go.
Yep.
But Lagasse played well. Let's keep Subban fresh. I think after the way he played last night, they'll think a little harder about that. I think it'll now become a true one. Like Subban is the one. I think it's kind of been 1A and 1B in their minds. And yep. I think after how well Subban has been playing and how much Lagasse struggled last night, I think it's now Subban is clearly the one, and Lagasse will only play if Subban absolutely needs a rest.
Now, you and I had kind of a back and forth yesterday on Twitter about why in the world Lagasse would even get the start. Now, I understand that Subban is coming back from an injury. I understand that it's an injury that is often an issue, an ongoing issue, a nagging issue for goalies. But if he was physically capable of going last night, and the Golden Knights cognizantly went away from him, that's on them.
Yeah, but I think, like I said, I think their confidence was higher in Lagasse than it should have been because he played. He didn't play awful. I mean, he has the worst save percentage in the NHL. We can't sugarcoat it. But he did make some really good saves.
We're reminded of that,
and he
constantly
did, and
too.
He did win three. Yeah, he did win three games in a row prior to last night. He won his last three starts prior to getting smoked last night by the Jets. But I think with the way these injuries have happened for the Golden Knights, I think that Dave Pryor is being really cautious, and he doesn't want Subban to go out for another month, and that's why he didn't play on the back-to-back. I think you heard Vegas Golden Knights insider Gary Lawless asked him, we're going to get to see Subban for his first back-to-back of his career. Because remember, in Boston, he barely played. He never had a back-to-back.
Yeah.
We're going to see him. And Gallant said, we'll see how he's feeling. And to me, that's not, we'll see if he's too exhausted to play. The kid's like 20 years old. He's fine. He can play four games in a row if he needs to. It's just, I think when he says, let's see how he's feeling, I think it's, how is that leg feeling?
Sure.
And do we want to push him and possibly re-injure that? So I think that's the reason Lagasse played. I think from this point forward, Subban, I'll say this. We talked about, before Subban came back, we were like, you guys realize he's got fewer games in the NHL than Lagasse and Dansk.
Yep.
I think Subban is closer to taking Fleury's job, a healthy Fleury's job, than he is to being behind Lagasse or Dansk at this point.
I agree with you. And let's just take a quick look at the remainder of the schedule in December. So they've got Arizona on Sunday, Anaheim on Tuesday, and then there's a back-to-back on the road, Nashville and Dallas Friday and Saturday. So there's really no reason why Lagasse needs to start any of those four games.
Agreed.
Okay. The following week, they don't play again until the following Tuesday, the 12th, against Carolina at home, and then Thursday, Pittsburgh at home. No reason why Lagasse needs to start either one of those games.
Agreed.
The following week, they play Sunday, Florida at home, Tampa Bay Tuesday, and then they don't play again until Saturday, Washington at home. Again, no reason why Lagasse starts any of those.
Agreed.
And then you've got a back-to-back on Wednesday and Thursday after the Christmas break against Anaheim and Los Angeles on the road. And then you finish it up with Toronto on New Year's Eve, 12:30 start time. So you look at December.
It's pretty spaced out.
There's no reason, I mean literally zero reason, why Malcolm Subban does not start every single one of those games.
Unless that lower body injury is acting up, and only Dave Pryor knows that.
Sure, but if that's the case, what do you do with Malcolm Subban? Because if he's having situations or there are times where he's not going to be physically able to play the game because of an injury or because an injury is acting up, why don't you rest him then? Why don't you make him not an option?
When I say that it's because of the injury, I'm not saying it's hurting. I think maybe he's just the next morning he wakes up, he's a little sore after a game.
Okay.
And it's like, man, coach, every time I play, I feel fine during the game. Mm-hmm. I feel 100%. The next morning when I wake up, that lower body is killing me.
Yeah.
Maybe let's not play me the very next day after a game. And then the day after that, 2 days later, I feel fine again. I'm back to 100%. I can play again. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just trying to make a case for why you would play Lagasse last night.
So this is my follow-up question to that. If Subban may not be physically capable right now, this moment, after coming off IR, to play back-to-back games, why would you start Lagasse against the Winnipeg Jets and not against the Minnesota Wild?
Well, I mean, I don't know.
The firepower for Winnipeg is significantly greater than the firepower for Minnesota.
That's true, but I don't know if that's how they're like planning the goalies out.
They need to be.
Yeah, I mean, they lost to both. They were probably going to lose to both regardless.
See,
I don't think Subban wins that game last night. I think Subban would do a lot better than Lagasse did, but Jets are just really good.
That the Line A goal would not have been a goal.
That was a horrendous goal.
If Subban was playing, it would have been a goal. The wraparound goal wouldn't have been a goal if Subban was playing.
Subban does. That's one of his struggles, is playing against the... It's one of his struggles playing against the wraparound. But I think he does it a lot better than Lagasse, obviously, because that was pretty bad. He turned the wrong way.
Just how crappy is it, though, that you get four goals on the road and you don't come away with the win? And you were up in the game. You were up in the game. It was the second game in a row where you found a way to come back, get up in the game, and you lose the lead.
Yeah. It was, I mean, and the Wild game, too. Those were two tough losses.
Mm-hmm.
And they tied their longest losing streak in franchise history, three games.
Yep.
It's tough. This team's going to have losing streaks. And I saw on Twitter the fans are panicking, which is great because that's what you want. You want, if fans didn't care that they were losing, that's bad.
Right.
You want the fans to panic. Maybe not Montreal type panic, set crap on fire, but you want the fans to be upset when they lose.
Yeah.
But the fans got to realize it's an 82 game season. This team is not going to just consistently win all year long. They're going to go through losing stretches.
Yeah, and they are. And we, it's our job to nitpick everything and second guess everything and, you know, pretend like we know better than everybody else. But I still think if you get four on the road, you got to win that game or at least get a point.
I think get a point out of it. I'm not going to say, especially against a high scoring team like Winnipeg, I think with four, you need to at least get a point out of it.
Yeah. Now, real quick before we get out of here, what are your thoughts on Winnipeg? You think they're as good as their record indicates right now?
Maybe better
than
their record indicates. This team's going to be good going into the playoffs. They're just stacked.
They have everything you could possibly want on a team.
They sucked for a couple years, mm-hmm. and they got high draft picks, and they nailed them.
Yeah.
And that's the way the system is designed is for crappy teams to get great players through the draft.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is most crappy teams can't find great players because that's why they're crappy. Winnipeg has done things the exact right way. They haven't tried to go out and buy a bunch of free agents. They've done things the right way. They've built through the draft. They've drafted a bunch of guys that obviously you have to have those high picks, which they did, but they nailed them.
Yeah.
And now all those guys are kind of coming into their own at the same time. And this team is really good.
Yeah, I agree. So, covered a lot today. Jesse, where can people find you?
At JesseGranger_ on Twitter and LasVegasSun.com.
All right. You can find me at RyanHockeyGuy on Twitter. Thank you guys for listening to the Rink Rats this week. We'll be back next week to talk more news around the NHL and Golden Knights hockey. Thanks.